Welcome to New Books in Political Science. My name is Heath Brown. Today I have the pleasure to talk with Dan Kreese, who's the author of Taking Our Country Back, The Crafting of Networked Politics from Howard Dean to Barack Obama. I hope that you enjoy the interview today that I did with Dan. Welcome to New Books in Political Science. My name is Heath Brown, and I have the pleasure to talk to the author today of Taking Our Country Back, The Crafting of Networked Politics from Howard Dean to Barack Obama. Welcome, Daniel Kreese. How are you?
Thank you for having me, Heath. I'm doing well.
It's a real pleasure to have read your book and to talk to you today. Before we get started with the actual book, maybe you can tell me and the audience a little bit about where you are, where you have been, and where you are now.
Sure. So I guess I'll start with the general institutions that have shaped this book, and it really grew out of my time as a master's student in journalism at Stanford in the Department of Communication, and then I fell in love with the academic project and stayed on to do a PhD, and then after that did a postdoc at Yale Law School, which has a wonderful interdisciplinary group called the Information Society Project that gave me a lot of the opportunity to write and to do the research on the Obama campaign. And I'm about to be starting my second year in the School of Journalism and Mass Communication at the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill.
Wonderful, wonderful. It's this varied background, I think, that really does shape the book and sort of put it both in political science, but also, you know, in a couple of these other related and interdisciplinary fields. So it's a great book. I really do enjoyed it. You structured the book around three themes: innovation, infrastructure, and organization. And maybe we can talk about each one sort of in turn. And maybe starting with infrastructure is as good a place as anywhere. So you write in the book that despite its importance, the academic literature on new media and politics has generally overlooked the role of infrastructure in campaigning. You go on shortly after that to write that the book focuses closely on myth-defying backstage that consumes much of the working lives of those active in politics. So I wonder if you could talk at the start here about what exactly has been overlooked by the existing literature and what maybe some of these myths are that you're trying to defy in putting together this book.
Sure. I'm glad you pulled that quote out because I think it really speaks to a large part of the academic project here. And certainly some of the questions that I was trying to answer. I really started this book at a time when I think there's a lot of hope for new media to radically transform democratic processes and to really sort of radically empower the citizenry. And this idea, I think, was really grounded in particular theories of collective action that started to see that the cost of doing things like finding other people who support particular causes as you, the cost of organizing and coordinating people, and the cost of time and effort really to engage in certain forms of collective action had fallen so dramatically that it was really going to sort of eliminate the need for things like formal organizations and formal campaign organizations, et cetera. And I think that, you know, one of the things that I quickly found when I started interviewing folks who worked on campaigns such as Obama's was just how much time they spent building infrastructure. And, you know, I define in terms of organizational forms, things like practices, obviously things like political technologies and tools, and really how much of what they did every day, the campaigners themselves, was sort of struggle with building new infrastructure to enable people to do things, dealing with problems when tools and technologies broke down, and they often did break down, and just really one of the things that I was struck by was how most of what we take for granted, such as, you know, being able to give money online, was really the result of years of hard work developing systems that could handle, you know, massive amounts of contribution. A lot of the things that we sort of tend to think about as being now routinely part of new media campaigning, such as, you know, letting citizens create groups for candidates to help them organize their own neighborhoods, was also the result of years of trial and error, you know, working on things like databases and interfaces. And, you know, this work really carried over far before any of the actual campaigning takes place, and often in between election cycles, which is something that scholars really paid very little attention to. On the whole, it tends to be, I think, the academic literature each election cycle anew and just sort of really focus on, you know, the active period where, you know, primaries are being conducted and candidates are fundraising and working with party networks, et cetera. But a lot of what I found was that really the groundwork for those times takes place, you know, on the days after a presidential election, for example, and take years in the making to come together.
You know, one of the parts of literature that hasn't done this is a colleague of yours, Dave Karp, who has written a book that really goes with this, and I think it's even in the same series.
Yes.
On digital politics, and one of the focus of much of his book is on MoveOn, the organization founded in the early 2000s or late 1990s. MoveOn features in your book as well,
yep,
particularly in the section on innovation.
Yeah.
And there was one section here that really caught me, and you talk about sort of the impact of MoveOn on the Howard Dean campaign.
Yeah.
And you write in chapter two, quoting a Dean staffer, that about a visit that they had from MoveOn, and the staffer says, "That visit, more than any other single day, transformed the way we thought about much of the internet campaign. In that day, we moved from chaotic creativity to creativity driven by the need for email list growth." So what was the relationship between the Dean campaign and MoveOn, and what did it mean for the campaign to begin to think proactively? That was one of the contributions that they attribute to MoveOn, was this change in thinking. So what's are the two organizations, how close are they, and what does one learn from the other?
Yeah, well, I mean, so the relationship was interesting in that, you know, MoveOn sort of had built what was, I think, you know, even still the most powerful online digital advocacy organization and sort of style of new media organizing in the world, really. And even in 2004, 2003, 2004, you know, we're a powerhouse in progressive politics, raising millions of dollars, you know, a massive membership base, et cetera. And, you know, when I was talking to some of the guys at MoveOn, what they really wanted was to sort of teach other groups and other campaigns what they learned, really over the 5 years that they were sort of honing their model, refining their model, et cetera. And they offered to help all the Democratic presidential candidates, and it was only the Dean campaign that got back to them and responded to them. So, you know, a couple of their principals came over and spent some time with the Dean campaign and really sort of worked with them to hone the email organizing model that MoveOn had developed over the years. And, you know, I'll say a little bit about that. There's a larger analytical point here in that when we think about things like innovation, I think one of the blind spots that we've had in scholarship is to draw conceptual boxes around different types of social activity. So, for example, we have social movements in one group, and we have interest groups in another group, and we have, you know, presidential campaigns in another group, and scholars sort of specialize in each one of these areas. One of the things that I really found that was so fascinating about both Dean and Obama was that there was always this transfer of people, of technologies, of ideas, practices across these domains that scholars usually keep separate. And MoveOn really illustrated this, right? I mean, MoveOn comes from much more of a social movement background, although it also functions like an interest group. And Dave's work, who's both a friend and colleague, I think is brilliant on talking about this more. But, you know, MoveOn is not a campaign, although they certainly get involved in them and urging their members to do certain things or endorsing candidates, et cetera. But what, you know, one of the roles that I was sort of looking at is the ways in which they sort of transfer knowledge and skills across these different areas of activity. And that's something that I think not a lot of scholars have paid enough attention to, and that I've found to be really routine. And, you know, to jump ahead 4 years later, I mean, it was the movement into the Obama campaign of people from industry. People from companies such as Facebook and Google who join Obama's new media team and sort of carry with them different ways of using technology, different goals often of using technology, different logics for what they're doing on a presidential campaign, et cetera. And that was a really important story of the innovation from the campaign. So in terms of concretely what MoveOn brought the Dean campaign, I think, you know, the quote that you provided really sums it up. You know, MoveOn was the first group to really systematically use email for organizing purposes. And they did so in ways that, you know, they created a format of what an email should look like, and it was optimized to generate, you know, the highest response rates from people who were receiving it. You know, they're very mobilization-focused. They created action items, et cetera. And up until that point, the Dean campaign, which was really the first presidential effort to be using email so systematically, were sort of doing so in a way that was more ad hoc, both in terms of what their goals were, although fundraising was clearly a goal from very early on, but also in terms of how they were even thinking about approaching email. It was, you know, simultaneously seen as a way of, you know, moving information out, engaging supporters, et cetera. What I think MoveOn really did was sort of was teach the Dean folks sort of ways that they could think about email as a tool for organizing, both in terms of building a list, and in terms of, you know, having very specific asks and having very specific formats, to be using it in much more systematic ways that was going to contribute to the electoral effort in the end. And that's one of those great examples of you know, that, you know, the ways in which innovation then becomes part of infrastructure later on, because a lot of the folks who worked on Dean in email, including Joe Rospers, you know, later went on to the Democratic Party and then ultimately the Obama campaign, and sort of carried with them and refined this particular style of using email for organizational purposes.
Yeah, and I'd like to go back to Joe Rospers in a second, but maybe before we get to that, you know, the impression that you leave is that a lot of this on the leadership front can be the credit could be given to Joe Trippi. That he was able to, he wasn't a technologist himself, but he was able to kind of empower the people in the various internet email technology divisions of his organization to do things that perhaps the other campaigns weren't empowering their technologists to do. And the impression is that Joe Trippi's somehow got it to a greater extent than others. But all didn't go well. And so aside from the infamous scream, what went wrong for Howard Dean in Iowa that prevented these advances and innovations on the technology front not to translate ultimately to his victories in the Democratic primaries?
Well, I mean, it's let me say a little bit first about, you know, Joe Trippi's role in the campaign, because I think one of the things that he did really brilliantly was carving out a space for innovation on the campaign where staffers could experiment. And, you know, I think, and one of the quotes from one of the folks I interviewed sort of said, captured this best, is to say, you know, there didn't always have to be a very clear outcome to what they were working on, but they were sort of given a latitude and a degree of freedom to really explore and to try new things, because I think one of the things Trippi realized is that this, the internet was new in so many respects in campaigning, and the Dean phenomenon certainly was at a scale that far eclipsed any of the online presidential campaigns that had come before. And, you know, what I think Trippi did was sort of provide this space organizationally that gave staffers the freedom to experiment and explore. But he was also focused on sort of the metrics that the campaign would need to carry out an effective campaign. And ultimately, you know, one of the very key metrics and things that campaigns spend a lot of time trying to figure out what to do is raise money, and raise money to do things like air television advertisements, raise money to do things like open field offices and put them on the ground, et cetera. In terms of what happened in Iowa, I mean, one of the challenges that really sort of struck me was how should we think about the role of new media in a presidential campaign, or any campaign for that matter? And there's a million different variables, and there's a million different things that campaigns are trying to do. And I don't think new media will ever, you know, new media alone will ever win an election, you know, but it certainly can, at its best, you know, translate a lot of enthusiasm and energy into concrete resources. You know, that's one of the arguments I make about the Obama campaign later on. But what I think there was on the Dean side was there was a difference in some senses between what was taking place online and what was taking place on the ground in states like Iowa. And certainly through no fault of their own. Again, I mean, I think that, you know, this area of campaign practice was so new is that folks were sort of struggling to figure out, well, how exactly are we going to harness this energy? What are the right metrics for thinking about what we hope that people are going to be able to accomplish? You know, what are the right ways that we can go about organizing our supporters, et cetera? And because it was so new, as I, you know, said before, when we talked about infrastructure, there was no real best practices for how to do this. And one of the key things that I think Obama new media team learned very well was how to integrate field campaigning, which is sort of your traditional get out the vote, door knocking, et cetera, with the new media side of things. And that is something that I don't think the Dean campaign had in place in Iowa in 2004. Now, there's a whole bunch of other factors that come into play. I mean, there was a series of television advertisements that Dean had produced that, you know, were sort of widely seen as being ineffective and, you know, spent a large amount of the campaign's budget. There was a lack of recruiting precinct captains across Iowa, and that this was something that the campaign only really awoke to very late. And Iowa, as a caucus state, is very much sort of oriented towards precinct captains and having neighbors organize their own communities, et cetera. So there was a basic lack, I think, in some aspects of the field operation on the ground. And not a lot of effective organizing for the caucuses in particular, which require a high degree of organizing. You know, and then beyond that, I mean, some of the stuff, I was actually there as a master's student, as a journalism master's student at the time, and a lot of what I saw on the ground, I was following around a group of Bay Area volunteers, was, you know, databases that, you know, didn't always work correctly, that, you know, people were, you know, people, they were doing turnout in similar neighborhoods, duplicating efforts. There was lots of folks coming from out of state who anecdotally, at least, it seemed like Iowans were a bit skeptical about. So I think all these things really came into play, you know, and really layer that, too, on top of the fact, as political scientists would know well, that, you know, the Iowa electorate looks different than the electorate of other states. And, you know, Dean's support and members of the campaign said this as well. You know, Dean's supporter bases came in more urban areas among different aspects of the Democratic Party's base than were on the ground in Iowa. So it would have been tough, I think, for him to win even to begin with. So all those things sort of converge in and around that, you know, to result in being third place win in Iowa.
And in many ways, this takes us up both to the third pillar of your book, but also to the Obama campaign, which is the organizational component of this. And you write about the Obama campaign, I think this is early in the book, that the campaign was first and foremost an achievement of organization, the hard work of its staffers to bring people, tools, and practices into alignment and in accord with electoral strategy. You know, from a distance, this would run counter to the narrative about Obama, the transformational figure, the orator. Why do you argue that the organization was so central to the president's success in 08?
Well, I mean, you know, this goes back to the general sense that the new media, I think more generally on campaigns, works best when it's in place to be able to translate enthusiasm and energy into things campaigns need. You know, campaigns face a very sort of defined institutional environment. They ultimately need money to do things like run ads, you know, and then votes on election day. And, you know, there's not a lot of wiggle room there. And it's what campaigns focus a lot on. So I think one of the things that, and you know, I think that there's a lot of other people who have written brilliantly about this. You know, Obama's rhetoric, for example, I think helped create a lot of that enthusiasm and that mobilization. And certainly the fact that he was a top tier candidate and benefited from a lot of media coverage, even out right out of the box, I think was important at generating interest and desire among the wider electorate. I think he, you know, there was certainly a degree of charisma about the candidate as well, and people's response to him. So all those things certainly come into play. The issue that I think, and what sort of led me to focus my book in particular ways on organization and new media in particular, was to say, well, you can have all the energy and enthusiasm in the world, but that doesn't necessarily mean that it's going to be directed towards those very defined, concrete things that campaigns need, right? You still need people to be all working towards similar goals, and those goals might be raising money. Well, then how do you get everyone on the same page donating and making solicitations for you? You know, you need to turn out your supporter base on election day. Well, how do you get everyone working in concert to help you do the really hard work of going door to door to turn out your supporters, to be having conversations with those people who are persuadable, etc. All of that takes organization. And I think, you know, one of the things that the Obama campaign really thought long and hard about was how do we, you know, design a campaign organization that's best going to help us translate all of that energy and enthusiasm into those very concrete, defined things that we need. And you know, whether that's boots in the ground, whether that's money in our coffers, and whether that's votes on election day, what we're going to do is think about how to organize to coordinate all of that, all of those supporters.
Yeah, and speaking of design, you write some very interesting stuff, and stuff you don't typically see in political science about design itself. So the campaign hired both an art director and a design director. That is the Obama campaign. What, and you, the suggestion is these are novel hires. So what role did design itself play in the sort of the artistic design sense? What role did design play in the Obama campaign?
Yeah, I'm glad. So this is one of the more fascinating aspects to me, because it's something that I never really thought all that explicitly about until I talked. The people who actually worked on design on the campaign. So there's two aspects of design. The first is sort of about using design to really, in a sense of cultural mobilization, so ways in which that you can inspire people to stay engaged with the campaign, that you could project a certain image of the candidate. And the designers on the campaign thought long and hard about how they could use the campaign's website and graphic design to really further perceptions of the campaign, to keep people engaged and inspired. And just to give some examples, you know, one of the things that really stuck with me is one of the first things they did was standardize the Obama blue. So the blue that you saw on the website in 2008 was standardized all the way across the campaign. So all of the campaign's materials, and actually the new media division also ran a print shop. So they were essentially coordinating all the campaign's materials for all of their events were all coming through the new media division. But the idea is that once you standardize, say, the color blue across the entire campaign, all the way down from, you know, the yard signs to the website to even the candidate's necktie. I mean, this was the level of which they were thinking about this, that it would convey this sense that, you know, the junior senator of Illinois was an experienced and competent executive. It was a very polished look. It was a look that was designed to convey the sense that, you know, Obama was running a professional organization, and they would bring that discipline and that coherence, you know, to the nation, to the nation's focus, et cetera. And they did a whole bunch of other other things, such as using particular typefaces and fonts that would convey an aesthetic of America and American values. You know, they were looking through things like historical documents and photographs of iconic American events and moments to stylize images of the candidates that would conjure them up. So, for example, you know, looking at photos in the civil rights movement and stylizing the candidates' image in particular ways that would make those associations without ever stating it. The neatest and I think most innovative aspects was to create tailored versions of the campaign's logo. So that, you know, you could have many different supporter groups sort of see themselves in this logo. So, for example, it would be about, you know, having a rainbow flag or a rainbow design theme within the Obama campaign logo, you know, and the idea was that, you know, everybody around the country could essentially sort of see their identity reflected in the Obama campaign at the same time. And it was a wonderful way, I think, that the campaign sort of approached design in the sense of how could it really be seen as this other communications and marketing opportunity, that the website was actually going to be as much a reflection on the candidate as any of our television commercials are or as any of the speeches are.
Yeah, and you know, how coordinated this campaign was, I think, is really a story that you tell very well and from an interesting perspective. You know, one of the implications, and you talk about this in your conclusion, about what that means and the implications of that for citizen participation. And so the sort of a closed system that the Obama campaign used and succeeded with might not have been as compatible with kind of the open vision that maybe some of the founders of Move On and some of the enthusiasm that some of the supporters had that they were going to be members of the campaign, that, you know, they would be citizen campaign staffers. Let's sort of move to your conclusions and talk a little bit about that. Where does all of this take you in terms of your sort of step back and takeaways from this? What is this story about new media and the incorporation of it in these two campaigns say about sort of the state of the democracy, state of campaigns, and whether, you know, what's the big picture issue for you?
Yeah, I mean, I think, as you alluded to, you know, the other aspect of design is really what, you know, when you deploy tools online, you can quantify things such as user actions. You can quantify and know more about your supporters than ever before in ways that were unthinkable even 10, 20 years ago. And the Obama campaign really sort of developed this computational way of working where everything was being run through data. So whether that's about where to allocate staffers or allocate resources, you know, such as whether you're going to run another online ad or whether you're going to invest in more email staff. And as an external management tool, right, so in ways to supporters, so doing things like optimizing websites to probabilistically increase the likelihood that your supporters will take particular actions, and going all the way down and doing this based on who you know and what you know about your supporters, so that if they've given money before and they're in a particularly contested congressional district, you can show them a different version of a web page that they've already tested to know that probabilistically in the aggregate it's going to increase the rates of return and increase the likelihood that you're going to be making a donation to the campaign. So, this, as you're talking about, right, so there's all this energy and enthusiasm, and then there's also sort of this back end, these computational management practices that are trying to efficiently elicit the desired supporter actions, and to really sort of direct them and coordinate them in ways that ultimately are important for the campaign. So all of this comes together, and the question that you asked, is, you know, how should we think about this? And you know, what I call and what I refer to this in the book is being, you know, hybrid organizing practices. So organizing practices that couple computational management with citizen empowerment. And I'll say a little bit more about that. So on one level, it was always surprising to me that you know, supporters and their independent efforts got so much attention from scholars, and the organizational side of things, what the campaign was doing, never got any attention at all, really, in much of the academic literature. Because as I just mentioned, I mean, there's all these data systems going on behind the scenes, and they're testing messages, and they're figuring out what will get the most desired rate of return, and they're providing very defined areas for engagement, right? So it's not as if supporters are suggesting new policy platforms. Indeed, when they disagreed with the candidate and his policy switch around the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act, supporters take en masse to the web to start organizing to hold Obama accountable. So it's not as if they're having sort of these higher order policy discussions. The campaign is sort of defining their participation in very narrow ways and in ways that accord with those electoral dictates that I talked about earlier. But at the same time, it's not as if, you know, supporters are these dupes of the campaign. I think that one of the things that I'm on, that I take pains to stress in the book, most of the time, supporters and the campaign's goals are ultimately aligned. You know, supporters want to win an election. They don't necessarily want to, you know, contribute policy ideas, although they may. But really, at the end of the day, it's about finding a candidate who you align with and working hard to get him elected. And supporters have this very defined sense of they want to be campaign needs. They want to defeat John McCain and the Republicans during the general election, and they want to defeat Hillary Clinton during the primaries, and they're willing to work to do that. I think at times you see fissures in this alignment, right? And part of that is around the FISA organizing, when all of a sudden the goals that supporters have seem to diverge from the campaigns, and supporters start to say, oh, well, maybe we elected the wrong person, or maybe we gave the nomination to the wrong person and somebody who's not as progressive as we thought. But in the end, in the face of that external threat, their goals come back into alignment, and I think supporters are quite willing to work in those ways. So in terms of the state of democracy, I think it's a bit unfair to expect campaigns to be these radical proving grounds of these higher order areas of democratic participation, such as engaging in you know, policy debate, such as setting campaign strategy, et cetera. What I think campaigns as we've structured them in the United States are pretty narrow in their scope and their definition in terms of what they need to accomplish. And I think from that perspective, right, we see more participation in campaigns, but it's also participation in sort of old institutionalized electoral ways. It's about donating and talking to your neighbors and trying to persuade them, and ultimately voting on election day.
So your book is not about the Republican campaigns, but maybe to put on your, you know, sort of pundit hat for a second, have the Republicans caught up? Are they using some of the approaches that have been now tested and proven successful at least once? Has there been this kind of technology information transfer across the partisan divide, like we have seen across the progressive organizational divide?
Yeah, I mean, it's a great question, you know, watching this cycle unfold. But, you know, I would challenge, I think, some of the premise of the question in some ways. The language of, you know, catching up and the language of sort of advantages and disadvantages sort of ignores, I think, and I think it's... that's appropriate for all candidates in all contexts. And yet, if anything I think I found in my last 6 years of studying new media and electoral campaigns is that there's anything but a best way to use new media. And it depends on who the candidate is, who the party's base of support is, what electoral goals candidates have and campaigns have, you know, what electoral strategies are in terms of who they need to turn out and what sort of platforms those people are using online, et cetera. So we should expect the Romney and the Obama campaigns to have different new media strategies, and we should expect them to be investing different resources in them based on who they're seeing as their target groups that they need to reach, that they need to contact, that they need to raise money from. If we didn't see any divergence there at all, I'd be very surprised, because again, both candidates have very different bases that they need to appeal to, particularly now when there's fewer independent voters than there were even 4 years ago. And that, you know, at a presidential level, you have, you know, a lot of people with hardened opinions, and the game shifts more to turnout. So in that respect, I would say that, you know, saying that one person is up or down, et cetera, is a bit problematic, because it sort of ignores these larger contexts that campaigns unfold in. I will say a couple of things, though, that I do see sort of a broad investment in on both sides. Online advertising has been growing by exponential amounts to reach voters who are no longer watching live television. They're doing that to build lists and to solicit donations. So that is new, and I think that's going on both sides. And I think going back to your question, part of what we see is the Republican candidates and their campaigns and their parties looked very closely at what Obama did in 2008 in between elections to seek to learn from them. And one thing very specifically is that Zach Moffitt, Romney's digital director, has cited before, is that they looked at the organization of the Obama campaign and saw that the new media director was a senior staffer.
This is a real pleasure. It was really interesting to hear about this book. The title of the book, Taking Our Country Back, The Crafting of Networked Politics from Howard Dean to Barack Obama, was published recently by Oxford University Press. Daniel, thank you so much for your time today.
Thanks, Heath. This is great.
My pleasure.